Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What is the relationship between strong connections to other people and career success? Modern-day social media provide powerful new tools to stay in touch with colleagues and customers. And as my guest today will tell us, we have more to gain by reaching out to our associates in meaningful ways than by blasting them with digital noise. In fact, the most successful communicators are usually those who genuinely wish to help others at least as much as they hope to profit themselves. Keith Ferrazzi is CEO of the training and consulting firm Ferrazzi Greenlight. He has just updated and expanded his 2005 book, Never Eat Alone, and Other Secrets to Success, One Relationship at a Time. The new version is available now. Keith, welcome to Think.
Chris, thanks a lot for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
I want to start with what seems to me to be your essential philosophy, which is that we must be concerned with more than simply what our connections can do for us. We should be at least as interested in what we can do for other people. Will you talk about that?
Yeah, thank you for that. It really is at the core of why our book on, quote, networking differentiated itself almost 10 years ago and still remains the critical way in which we should navigate through the social media world that we're in today as well. Let me just be crass. I always say that the one rule of relationships is that no one has time for one with you. And that really comes from a sense of scarcity. I grew up a poor kid in Pittsburgh. Dad was an unemployed steel worker. Mom was a cleaning lady. And if I was going to be able to build the kind of rich network and set of relationships that some of the rich kids had that I went to a small private elementary school on a full scholarship had because of their parents, I had to distinguish myself when I reached out to folks. It wasn't just handed to me. And distinguishing myself, I realized very early on, wasn't just about scrambling, trying to figure out how other people could help me, but it was recognizing how I could be of service to other people. And we actually break that down into different areas. One way is, how do you be of service to people just by being who you are? Are you creating an environment around yourself that invites people in? That's a generous act in and of itself. But ultimately, it's how do you ascertain, and in this day of rich social media, you can ascertain what other people need for themselves, and then go on a journey of being of service to people, particularly the people that you most want to get to know.
You explained this very elegantly, so I will let you do that again here. But you write that our networks are our destinies. And that's a sentence that it seems could be grossly misinterpreted by people who assume that that means they need to get to know only the most important people.
Well, look, what I can say is that the first rule of building a strong network or a strong set of relationships, which I believe are intertwined. Some relationships are very loose and weak, and some relationships are very deep and intimate and tight, and you need all to be successful in this world. The first practical rule is that one needs to be planned and purposeful. We spend a lot of time in our research institute proving that the most successful leaders are the ones who have the capacity to build the deepest relationships, both among their team, with their team, and also with their team and other aspects of the company so that they can effectively get things done. The most successful salespeople are the individuals who build strong relationships with customers and clients and prospects, where loyalty is accelerated and people give you permission to tell your story. The most successful young careerists or careerists in general, or the people who built relationships with folks who help give them a shot, who forgive them when they screw up, and who prop them up and give them opportunities when they might not have, quote, earned it as of yet, right? So if relationships are core to your success, then why wouldn't you write down on a piece of paper the 5, 10, 25 most important relationships that you're working on right now to build? Now, a lot of people feel uncomfortable with that, saying, well, that feels awfully contrived, manipulative, or fake. But my point to people is that purposeful doesn't mean fake. Purposeful just means it's that darn important. Fake is what you are, and if you're reaching out to individuals to manipulate or to get something from them, without building a real relationship and without being of service to people, then it will stink on your suit a mile away, and you'll be one of those people that a lot of people cringe when they think of the smarmy networker. If, on the other hand, you're richly identifying the most important people to create greatness in your and their lives, deepening relationships with them as appropriate in service of them, that's what I'm talking about.
You are adamant that we need to get over being too proud or too embarrassed to ask for help now and then. Can you talk about that?
Sure. And a lot of it has to do with timing. If I'm walking down the street and somebody comes up and says, can I have 20 bucks? That's not building a relationship. That's asking for a handout. And you may or may not decide to do it because you may be receiving the gift of being able to give charity. But what I'm talking about is once a reasonable relationship is built, that we shouldn't be concerned or fearful to ask for help. And instead, what we've found in our research is that the act of asking for help, where a reasonable relationship exists such that the relationship can actually sustain the help that you're asking for. For instance, you and I have just met each other briefly on this call. Presumably after a little bit of time, you're going to get a sense for who I am, and we may actually have some sense of a personal connection, even though it was very peripheral and virtual. I think it's perfectly reasonable for me at that stage to say to you, Chris, you know, the medium of radio is so powerful, and I've always had such respect for NPR. Would you mind spending 5 minutes after this interview and give me some advice as how I can get my message to proliferate within the NPR network? Because it's really important to me. Would you mind doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the way, that's actually an authentic question in addition to being a hypothetical question.
We can talk after the show, sure.
Yeah, so what's wrong with that? That was an easy piece of help to ask for that was commensurate with the relationship that we had, right? Mm-hmm. If, on the other hand, after this, I asked to borrow $1,000, that probably wouldn't resonate as well. So, but on the other hand, I have very dear relationships that if I asked to borrow $1,000, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
So your ask has to be commensurate to the strength of the care and the intimacy and the relational quality. Now, I'm probably going a little too far, a little too early on this interview, but over time, you should even be thinking about measuring the relational quality in your network. If you've got a list of the 50 most important people to your growth and success and the growth and success of your family, what's wrong with saying this group of people on a scale of -1, which is damaged, 0, we don't even know them yet, but we'd like to, 1, I've been introduced to them, a 2 is an acquaintance, and a 3 is a real friend, trusted advisor, etc. What's wrong with saying one of my objectives this year is to move this relationship from an acquaintance to a trusted advisor? And so relational quality is something that we actually teach sales organizations and large companies how to manage and think about.
So we have all these new digital tools that have actually come online since the first edition of this book came out, and that's what a lot of your updates deal with. First of all, can you talk about the sites and the tools that you have found most helpful and then the ones that people tend to misuse most often?
Well, I think that's the same answer. the ones that I have found most helpful are often misused by many people. The LinkedIn in and of itself for professionals is an extraordinarily rich and valuable tool. And a lot of people just use it as a way to get their resume out there. But the idea of using it as a way to cultivate your going forward network is very powerful. I am right now making sure that all of my top relationships are in LinkedIn and that I'm connected with them. Also, my prospective relationships, where I may have only built a brief acquaintanceship with, I want to make sure that I connect with them on LinkedIn. Part of this is so that I can actually, for the most highest priority relationships, if they change jobs, if something happens in their lives, I get to know that because it's posted out there. Instead of finding out way late that somebody has exited a job, maybe involuntarily, maybe they've been fired, what a wonderful opportunity for me to reach out to them and say, hey, I just saw that you left such and such. Is there any way I can be of help? You know, can I introduce you to people in my network that could be of service? When people have those kind of changes in their lives, using social media to be there for them and to track them is very powerful. We never had that. That's different than just connecting with everybody. And, you know, there's a certain philosophy of wanting to gather likes on Facebook. That's fine. And I understand the ego-driven component of that, the sense of I want to be seen. But why not use it as a way to gather intimate information about people that you care about or would like to grow to care about and then find ways to be of service to them?
You don't necessarily draw a sharp line between business and personal communications in social media.
Yeah, I actually believe very strongly there is no distinction. And I know that I get in a lot of trouble with people when they misunderstand what I'm saying. But I'll just start at the macro. There's a lot I want to do in this world. I want to make a real impact. I want my life to have made a footprint here. And to do that, if I say I am going to balance my life, which means the time that I spend with my family, the time that I spend with nonprofits and being of service, the time that I spend with my companies, the time that I spend with my friends, are all distinct and independent times, and I've got to find a way to balance all of those, I don't think I'd end up serving any of them well. But, you know, my 16-year-old foster son and I have started a foundation that teaches other disadvantaged kids that have come from similar backgrounds to him. I mean, he came into our home at 12, and he's a rapper, and he loves rapping. So we have a foundation that teaches disadvantaged kids how to use rap to learn life skills. Now, it's interesting. I have leveraged that foundation to build relationships with CEOs of large organizations that I wanted to get to know better, because I felt that this foundation would be a good foundation for them to invest in that would help them tap into a taste-making group. I mean, young disadvantaged kids in cities actually are quite taste-makers, and it's very difficult for big brands to reach them. So I've given friends of mine an opportunity to invest in something and give back to a community that they're looking to influence. At the same time, my entire family and I, as I mentioned with my son, and I did this together. So now all of a sudden you start to see the richness of how to live a blended life. On Saturdays, my family and I go and get a workout together. Well, I actually get the workout, and some of them join me. And afterward, we walk across the street to a wonderful cafe, which any fans of mine, if they follow me and get in touch and get to know me online, have the ability to attend. So I will host a brunch every Saturday in Los Angeles for upwards of anywhere from 15 to 25 people. I pay for it, but it's a great opportunity for me to touch base with members of my company who haven't seen me all week because I've been traveling. I hang out with my family there. Fans that I haven't met before, or people who are pitching me business ideas or just would like my advice and I'd like to be able to give it to them, or people that I would like to get to know just in a social fashion can all come. And again, living a blended life, I think, leads a richer life.
My guest is Keith Ferrazzi. He is CEO of the training and consulting firm Ferrazzi Greenlight and author of the newly expanded and updated book Never Eat Alone and Other Secrets to Success, One Relationship at a Time. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372, email think@kera.org, or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/mls.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Keith Ferrazzi, CEO of the training and consulting firm Ferrazzi Greenlight, about his newly updated book, Never Eat Alone, and Other Secrets to Success, One Relationship at a Time. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. So many people want to connect through social media these days. They have blogs, they have Twitter feeds, they have Facebook accounts. But then some people seem to have a real knack and a real sense for what to put on those things. And other people do like the always, you know, very promotional kind of blasts at people that are not as interesting to read.
Well, I'll tell you, I was just talking to the folks who are running product and editorial over at LinkedIn. And I have made a commitment to put more of my time invested in that platform. I write right now for Harvard Business Review, and I write for Fortune, and I wanted to pick another venue. So LinkedIn came on my radar. What's interesting is one of my great friends, Beth Comstock, who's the chief marketing officer and head of innovation at General Electric, is the one of the leading influencers today over at LinkedIn. This is a woman who hasn't written a book. She hasn't gone on the speaker circuit, etc. She didn't start out by being some form of a guru. And when I asked, why do you believe Beth has had such success, the answer was pretty straightforward, and it was her authenticity. She really lets you into her life through the medium. And that's when I said to you earlier that the type of generosity with which you lead in the world, the first type of generosity is how you connect with people. And the predictor of your ability to gain relational strength with somebody and accelerate a connection, intimacy, loyalty, is frankly empathy. And empathy is about letting your guard down enough and letting people in. Now, this is difficult for people in the workplace and in general. People are always afraid that someone's going to hurt them. Well, the Gallup organization, and the president of our organization is the former CEO of Gallup, the Gallup organization has proven that there are a very small percentage of what we call actively disengaged, which are the kind of people that are out there thinking about how to hurt you. And it's a very small percentage compared to the lion's share of individuals who you can co-create greatness with. So you have an opportunity. You can live yourself protecting yourself against the jerks, or you can recognize that they're out there and begin to embrace the people that are ready to be embraced.
What is micro-celebrity, and why is it maybe enough now and as good as being sort of very well-known wherever you go?
Well, most of us in our professional lives and whatever life we're trying to advance, I mean, I was in Colorado this past weekend. We're doing a lot of work there advancing foster care agenda with Governor Hickenlooper. And the evening I walked into the lobby and there was this young man playing guitar. And he was extraordinary. I mean, this was one of the best lyricists and vocalists I've heard in a long time. So we paid him extra to stay later. And we started asking him questions in between sets just about how he was building his following today in an industry like music, and frankly, in any industry. We're also commoditized, and the channels that we want to represent ourselves, whether you're an insurance salesman, you want to be well-known for helping people with their financial success, or you're a lawyer or a consultant or a musician, you've got to build your following. And one of the things that I was recognizing for him was that he was not being very proactive building his micro-celebrity. I asked him who he followed in social media, and he wasn't following the individuals who were in his genre and already leading. He could build relationships with those people online that could ultimately move offline. He could by following those individuals and putting his songs up there, he could begin to draft off of the fan base of these people and start gaining fans for himself. He could begin to post content that's of service to that community in some way or another. And with him, it's a song. With the insurance salesman, it's a blog about budgeting. With the lawyer, it may be something about risk management. So we can begin to cultivate a following through serving a group of individuals online that really can grow our business. And we don't need to be known to millions and millions. We can build a very healthy life and a very healthy success with the thousands of individuals who really matter to know us.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Jean in Dallas. Hi, Jean.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. And,
it's wonderful listening to your guest. I remember when your book came out, and it's even better to hear you live. But my question for you is about whether or not you've done any work for how to implement the recommendations you're making, the differences between extroverts and introverts. I'm a lifelong introvert, and the definition that's always resonated most for me about the difference between introverts and extroverts is that introverts lose energy when they're with large groups of people, and extroverts gain it. And when I think about the wonderful things you do, like the brunch you host or even going online and connecting with friends. And
you get exhausted, don't you?
I just want to put it all away. It's just like, oh, my God, how could I do this? And I'm wondering if you have any insights into how introverts might deal with the suggestions you're making.
Well, I have both a suggestion, but I also have a bit of a challenge that might sound a little harsh. And I hope you appreciate it. It comes from a place of concern for the introverts in the world. If, in fact, we would all agree that our success is heavily driven by the people who are willing to help us, prop us up, move us forward. The relationships in our life are critical to our success. Would you agree with that? She's probably already off the line, but everybody usually says yes, mm-hmm. introvert or not. And then what I say is, well, if you opt out of that because of your natural predisposition in psychology, you run the risk of being mediocre, or you run the risk of being less than you deserve to be. And so with that as the driving force behind this, at a minimum, I want to give you that extra flame or that push, because this I consider to be one of many people's glass ceilings. The glass ceilings are the messages we tell ourselves that hold us back, and every one of us have them. They're the things we bump up against repeatedly. I recently gave a commencement speech at Cal Poly where I entreated the kids to identify what those glass ceilings were. And if you're an introvert, that's a bit of a glass ceiling. Now, that said, let me also suggest that I'm not asking you to bound into the room open-armed and start hugging and backslapping people. I'm saying be very thoughtful of the individuals that are important for you. And the individuals, your numbers are welcome to be fewer than mine, but there are going to be a set of individuals that are crucial to your future and for you to achieve your dreams. Now, let's be very thoughtful. And if sitting down one-on-one with a cup of tea is a better way to begin to initiate those relationships as opposed to a 25-person brunch, God bless you, that's great. But let's not abdicate the need to do it in a fashion that will work for you. I'm also not talking about manipulation or usury or the kind of stuff that makes a lot of introverts feel really uncomfortable that they think networking is about. I'm talking about building a real relationship, caring about somebody, being curious, finding out who they are. Introvert or not, we are anthropologically 70,000 years ago when our species was created. We are destined to be tribal. We want to connect. We long to connect. Give yourself that right. Your psychology may say danger, but your core DNA says, I need my tribe. So build your tribe. Build it slowly. Build it authentically. Build it generously. And it might not be as rich as another person's who has more psychological safety in relationships, but it will be more effective than if you avoided it.
Keith, what does it take to build connections if you are someone whose job requires a lot of cold calling?
Well, I don't believe in cold calls.
Right.
I work really hard to create warm calls. And a warm call is using technologies like there's a company called RELSI, Relationship Science, that helps you identify what your pathway is to connect with individuals you want to get to know. LinkedIn is a great platform for that, where you can figure out who knows who that you would like to know. And the ability to reach out and get a personal introduction to somebody is an extraordinarily more advantageous way than the quote, cold call. All the more reason why loose ties are effective. Somebody who has a reasonably loose tie to me that I trust a little bit is somebody I'm more likely to be able to refer to somebody else in my network, as opposed to somebody I don't know at all, of course. So the loose ties give you the chance to warm your cold calls. But the other way you warm your cold call is doing research. Research about the people. So if you researched Keith Ferrazzi, you thought you wanted to get to know me, you would find out my passion for foster care and the fact that we have two foster children ourselves, the fact that I'm working diligently with my foundation to help reinvent foster care. It's a broken system where these children have no capacity to connect and relate because that was abused early on with their primary parental relationships, and then they retreated transactionally thereafter. So we work very hard on the system. If you wanted to reach out to me, reaching out to me to say, I know somebody who is equally as interested in foster care as you, Keith, the two of you should probably meet. And, you know, we're in the process right now of funding a new system in Colorado, and I'm always interested in people who want to advance the foster care system. So there you go. You've now found a warm call way into my heart. And that's what we can do now that we don't have card catalogs, which is people don't even know what that is. And what I'm referring to, back in the good old day where you actually had to sit around and look up physical information in libraries, we have it at our mobile device, fingertips.
You have found, you mentioned being passionate about the foster care system and improving that. Health, wealth, and children, one of those three things will almost always allow you to find common ground with someone.
Indeed. When I'm asking you to create currency and be generous to others, I mentioned being of personal service to people is really critical. Health, wealth, and children. Wealth can be translated as helping their business, etc. It's interesting. I talk to people in financial services who are trying to sell me or other people financial instruments like investment portfolio advice, those sort of things. And I ask them, I'm curious, when's the last time you've ever helped one of your prospects or clients get a new client? I mean, people are always trying to get me to invest my money with them, but when have they ever helped me make more money? I mean, their network as a financial advisor could be rich enough to start cross-fertilizing people that they know. That we call that social arbitrage. So helping people develop their own wealth, helping people's children. If you come into our offices, we have interns all the time here. I love it. And many of the interns are children of clients and friends and prospects. I love to be able to be of service to other people's kids and to mentor them through what we have to give, which is exposing them to Ferrazzi Greenlight. Health. Years ago, I got to know a young, amazingly talented heart surgeon named Dr. Mehmet Oz. And it was just an authentic friendship that he and Lisa and us had together as couples. And today, he's one of the most prominent doctors in the world. And any time a friend of mine is in need of medical advice, I'm picking up the phone and I'm calling Mehmet and I'm saying, Mehmet, what doctor is the specialist in this area? I've become a connected hub to the resources that other people need. That is something you cultivate for yourself so that you can be of better service to others.
How selective do you need to be when you decide that you want to be generous and share your contacts and introduce people? You sort of are taking a risk there, and you need to know that the people that you have sort of given these introductions to are going to use them appropriately, right?
Yeah, I'm fairly discerning with the people that I connect, but when I feel like I'm not quite sure, I'm just transparent about that.
Mm-hmm.
I will often introduce two people, and usually when I introduce two people, I have in my own head done the calculus that it's beneficial to both. If I am not sure, I will pre-ask whether or not somebody is willing to meet somebody. If I'm not even sure of the credentials of an individual, I'll make that transparent, and I'll make it transparent to the person I'm referencing. I'll say, listen, I don't really know you that well. I've never worked with you. I can't necessarily say that I trust your capacity to deliver on what you want to do for Jane or Joe, but I'm happy to make the introduction with that conduit, and I'll let them make their own choice. People are you know, big folk, and they can make their own choice. So I probably go out on a limb a little bit more than most, but I think that most of us can go much further than we do in opening up our network to others. Certainly some people feel like relationships are like a piece of pie, and if you take one more piece out, you're almost done, and I need that favor for myself, as a story that I tell about one particular individual in Every Alone. But that's not really the way relationships work. Relationships, if you ask for a favor or you make an introduction, you're leaning on that relationship and you're saying to that person, lean on me back. And if you're of service to people, you are being leaned on. And eventually, that's the way the world works, and that now you're richly tapping into each other's generosity and you're serving each other back and forth and back and forth. And a friendship accrues, a trusted friendship accrues.
So it's not, as happened in the book with the person who wouldn't make an introduction for you, it's not a one-time only thing, right? If you're really building a relationship, you can do things for one another throughout the entire course of the relationship.
Exactly. It's certainly, you know, it's not like a piece of pie. Relationships are more like muscles, and the more you work them, the bigger they get.
Keith Ferrazzi is my guest. He's CEO of the training and consulting firm Ferrazzi Greenlight. His book, Never Eat Alone and Other Secrets to Success, One Relationship at a Time, has just been expanded and updated from the original version published in 2005. We'll come back to our conversation with Keith in just a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org, or you can send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with consultant Keith Ferrazzi of Ferrazzi Greenlight and author of the book Never Eat Alone and Other Secrets to Success, One Relationship at a Time. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Keith, let's talk about something old-fashioned, like a conference that people are still going to where they might meet dozens, even hundreds of people. How do you recommend that people make at least some of those new relationships feel more lasting and memorable to both sides?
Yeah. In fact, if you go online today and look at my name, Ferrazzi, and then type in the words conference commando, this is one of the chapters from the original book that got such an exciting return that we went ahead and made it a little bit bigger and gave some real directive advice. And there's 15 tips on how to be better at conferences. Let me tell you what the first one is. Go prepared. My pop used to say it's about the seven Ps. Prior proper planning prevents piss-poor performance. And what we need to do as individuals is make sure that before we go to a conference, whether it's a networking event or a large annual industry event that you go to, identify who's going to be there in advance, both speakers and guests, that you'd like to get to know. Reach out to them in advance. Most of us who go to these things, even speakers who are paid speakers, we're hanging out and waiting around in the sidelines until it's our time to be on that whole day, that whole morning. Now, most of the time, people will jump all over the speaker right after they speak. Mm-hmm. Now you're one of 50 people trying to talk to that person when they're trying to get out of town or get on to the next thing, whereas they're literally standing in the sidelines waiting before they go on stage. And what a great, rich opportunity to tap into them. There are individuals who are really hubs, and we talk about this in general, which is something Malcolm Gladwell introduced the word connector to the vocabulary with his early book. And who are the connectors at that event? Who is last year's event chair that today doesn't have any responsibilities, is just walking around, but knows everybody? How do you get to know that individual? How do you serve that individual? Could you volunteer in advance to be of service at the event in any way at all? It could even be, some of the times what I will do is I'll call the conference organizers and I'll offer, I have a little bit of money, I can do this, I'll offer to host a reception. Now, I'll pay for it, they don't have to pay for it, and I'll get to know all the people that and get exposed to the VIPs that are coming to the event. Or you could even just serve that reception in some way, checking people in, et cetera. Now you've got a direct access to those individuals. So there's lots of things we can be doing if we are really just designed and thoughtful on how we're managing the event.
I love the idea for those of us with more limited means of taking a picture of new people you meet, and then it's the perfect excuse to follow up with an email after the event.
Yeah, there's so many. And these are small elements of currency that we are riddled through the book, right? And you've just picked one out, which is a good one. What are the little things that you can do that say, oh, I'd love to get a picture of the two of you, you know, someone's there with their associate, et cetera, and I'd be happy to send it to you. But just constantly being vigilant and thoughtful on how to be of service. That's what we're talking about.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Therese in Dallas. Hi, Therese.
Hi there. I read your book back in 2005 and absolutely loved it. I thought it was terrific. And I have a question for you. If you have something that is very focused, let's say what you're trying to do is you're trying to do a startup and you're trying to find small investors outside of the normal range of things like angels or VCs, that type of thing, how would you go about trying to tap into people who are very scattered, unknown, but might be waiting for an opportunity to put down some money on something that is very low risk,
reward? Increasingly, there are microfunding sites, as you know, that may be places to find these individuals. But assuming you've gone down that path and you're looking even for a more obscure group, one of the lessons that I try to tell people is build your relationships before you need them. So depending upon the focus area that you're talking about, it's probably some kernel of it is some set of intellectual property, something, whether it's you're looking to launch a new business to at-home moms, you're looking to launch a new business to whomever. Begin to cultivate, we were talking about earlier, your micro celebrity so that the individuals who matter to that small subsegment do know who you are. And among a few of them, you've got to know them well enough that you can reach out to them and say, who do you know care enough about this event, this opportunity that they'd be able to invest a small amount of money that's fairly risk-free? So it really does boil down to cultivating the network in advance. And how you go about doing that is you find online where these people are congregating, and then you use the referral network, having built a reasonable connection online, to move that connection offline, where it could be a phone call and a pitch.
We have an email here from Dustin who says, I'm a criminal defense trial attorney. The most important part of my job is creating relationships and bonds with potential jurors. I'm interested to know if you have advice for creating real relationships in a very short span of time. Dustin says,
oh, I do.
I meet complete strangers.
I've never thought about this particular application, but we certainly help people in retail and sales, leaders, etc. And let me explain. I'll give you four or five things that are critical, but they sort of all boil up to one thing, empathy. People, if you're looking to influence someone, you've got to have earned the right to influence them. And earning the right to influence somebody, you want to make them open to be influenced, open to connect with you, open to trust you. Empathy. What that means typically is letting your own guard down and being, I'm going to use a word that often people think of with negative connotation, but I consider it courageous, and that is the word vulnerable. your ability to be authentic, transparent, vulnerable, are mechanisms to go about creating trust and empathy. So when I'm on stage, it's easy for me to stand up and I used to, by the way, talk about, you know, Yale undergrad, Harvard Business School, youngest partner ever elected at Deloitte, youngest officer in the Fortune 500 at Starwood Hotels, and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, you could just feel the audience slipping away from you. Who is this jerk?
Like, he's more accomplished than I could ever be. Is that what you're... That's how people perceive you?
I just think it's... That's not me.
Mm-hmm.
And empathy is about finding me. So if I stand up on stage and talk about, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh, an immigrant Italian family, the struggles that my family had in the 70s of being unemployed and my mom working, scrubbing houses that she hated, and me having to get a job in my early teens just to help support the myself and the family, and being teased incessantly at a small private elementary school, which was both a blessing and a real challenge, and how that fueled who I am today, and sometimes, by the way, even fuels me overstepping and trying to pretend, you know, that I'm bigger than I am because I'm afraid that people won't see me for who I am, and that level of is that weakness or was that courageous? I have found over the years that that's courage, that level of authenticity and transparency is courage, and it's rewarded with trust.
Hmm. So you, in order to build those relationships quickly, that's what you're suggesting to someone like Dustin. You the first thing you do is get out there with something that makes you vulnerable.
I have watched Perry Mason, and I know I think he's on the other side, if I'm not mistaken. But I have watched the TV shows, and it really is the individuals who are connecting with the folks, and it's about personal connection. You know, they don't care where you went or you had your law degree. In fact, that may hold you back because it may distance you from them. What they care about is whether you care about them and whether they can care about you. My pop used to say, "Don't try to get people to care about you." No, I'm sorry. He said, "Don't try to get people to like you. Find a way to care about them."
Hmm.
And I do that before I go on. I mean, one of the things I would do if I were you is I would look the eyes of the jury and I would ask yourself, who are they? And begin to care for them. Understand their backstories in your head. Coach yourself to the point where you're not just seeing a group of people who you're trying to get something out of called a verdict. You're trying to actually understand who these people are, and you're empathizing with them. As you empathize, care for them and their plight and their situation, even just the disturbance that some of these people have of missing work and being away from their families. And if you start to really give a damn about that, they will begin to give a damn about you, and they'll listen to your message.
What's the best way to stay in contact with your associates in between time that you are actively doing business together, and what kinds of communications really matter to people that you want to stay in touch with?
Well, we talk about something called a pinging strategy. A pinging strategy is your ability to reach out to the world in a series of regular intervals and stay in touch. So if somebody is an A-level priority to you, and again, some people may get a little off-put by my prioritization of relationships, but we prioritize relationships all the time. Our children are more important than the neighbor's children, so they're an A priority, and maybe your neighbor's kids aren't even on your priority list. So we prioritize, so let's make it conscious. Of those A-level priorities, make sure that you literally have a reminder in your calendar. What is it? Once a week? Once a month? You decide. But there's a cadence of outreach that's important. And if the cadence of outreach isn't, and your relational quality isn't enough that you're just going to pick up the phone and call them because they're not that strong, go online. Find out what's happened in their life for the last month so that you can reach out and say, hey, I saw that article in the Wall Street Journal. Congratulations. Or I was noticing that your company was going through a tough time. Are you okay? So being able to be proactive and put a system around relational outreach, we call it a pinging strategy. And emails are still pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that you've brought it up twice now that, you know, someone either loses a job or their company is struggling. You say, go ahead and send a message. So many people are uncomfortable with that and they don't sort of want to pour salt in the wound. But, I think many people who've been in that situation really need to feel that they're not suddenly persona non grata because things at their job don't go well.
Yeah, I meet a lot of really interesting individuals. I've come across them in my life. And I met and spent a weekend with Martha Stewart years ago based on her interest in a business opportunity. I stayed in touch, but where I strengthened the relationship is when she was going to prison, and I made sure that I reached out to her. And when she was there, my sister was always a big fan and always continued to be a big fan of hers, and I made sure that she knew that. When First Lady Hillary Clinton was going through what I couldn't imagine as a woman going through some of the most difficult things in her, I would imagine, life, with the scandals that were going around in the White House, I sent her a book that I thought would be particularly meaningful. I had met her on a foundation event, and we had shared a visit of a site that we were looking to invest and restore in the national parks. But I took that permission to reach out, and I got one of the most lovely messages back, and it's something that she's never forgotten. So no matter who people are real. People need to know that when they're struggling, that there are others who aren't judging, who are there for them, who are in whatever ways just wanting to be of service.
You mentioned growing up kind of in a working class family. I would imagine that things financially are much easier for your children. Do you have to teach them in different ways than you learned yourself all of these skills?
Oh gosh, yes. And this is a place I am, this is not my specialty. Although we are specialists in our company on human behavior change and understanding the levers of helping people change behavior, and we certainly do apply that to our boys. One of my boys is 20 and the other one's 16 now. And it's been a real struggle. They're both foster kids, and we've had to do a lot of reparative work, relational reparative work, because if you think about the reptilian brain that controls our fight-flight mechanism, these kids want to flee or fight, but either way, they don't feel safe. So what I've been trying to do is lead by example as much as possible for them. They certainly see me having dreams and aspirations today, and they see the strategies and the ways in which I go about fulfilling them. They also see that it's so important to give back. Yesterday, I was so touched. There was a woman with her two children with a sign on Sunset and on Crescent Heights.
And forgive me, we just have a few seconds left.
The bottom line is you got to teach your kids to be of service early on, and so that they can grow that as a core value, even if it's being of service to a family that's in need, homeless on the street.
Keith Ferrazzi's newly updated book is called Never Eat Alone and Other Secrets to Success, One Relationship at a Time. The new version is available now. Keith, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Oh, it really is my pleasure. Thank you. And I look forward to following up on the conversation.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer with help on the phones today from Gus Contreras. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.